This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Well, good evening, and Aaron Gobra. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Steve Hamilton, and you are tuning into Scenes of Violence on Fire Engineering's Blog Talk Radio, and thank you very much for choosing to do so. Hopefully you have a glass or a cask of Irish whiskey within reach. Unfortunately, I am on duty as acting battalion, so I will not be partaking in that this evening. However, I pledge to get with my mother and my brother, and we, every St. Patrick's Day or therein, close to it, we call each other on the phone, and one of us, we rotate, will toast our loved ones who have passed, my father especially, and for my mother, her father, and we'll then toast and drink a shot of Tullamore Dew. So I expect to do that within the next couple of days. I'm pleased to bring on our guest this evening, Lieutenant Russ Howard from the Austin Fire Department. And Lieutenant Howard is also on duty. So we're going to try to get through this without any major working incidents causing us to break off. But if we got to break off, we can break off. But what we're going to talk about tonight, outside of our regular banter about scenes of violence, is the city of Austin has a joint pre-staged rescue task force for large and planned events. And in October into November, I went to the Alert Conference in Nashville, and I attended the class that actually discusses this in great detail. And Lieutenant Howard was one of the two speakers. And I was amazed at the simplicity conceptually of this idea and some of the tools and equipment that they used to deploy it. And I thought, you know what, let's see if we can reach out and get somebody on the show to talk about it. So that is where we are at. So let me introduce Lieutenant Howard and Lou, if you would, please tell us a little bit about yourself and let people kind of know who you are and where you're from, and what you're about.
Awesome. Yeah, man, thanks. I'm super excited to be here. Got to meet you at the Alert Conference and had some great conversation, and was happy that I got the phone call from you to reach out and talk about the subject that myself and Chief McKeon, my partner in crime on a lot of this stuff, are super passionate about. I've been with the Austin Fire Department now for April 16th will be 15 years for me, 2 years more in a local department, so about 17 years total in the fire service. I'm a lieutenant in the Special Operations Battalion of our city. I work at Station 31. And, man, I'm a longtime resident of Central Texas, really originally from the Dallas area. Lived in Colorado for a while, but when my wife drug me back to Texas away from the mountains, I had to find some a little more terrain than Dallas offered. So we landed on Austin and met a really cool neighbor there and ended up being a great friend who was an Austin fireman and kind of led me in a direction that I think I was intended to go for a long time, but I just never made the commitment or had my eyes open to do that. So, man, I've been with Austin ever since. We're a growing department. We're a progressive department in all the good ways. And man, I'm lucky to be here. I'm lucky to be on the show talking to you. I'm lucky to be in my department for sure.
Well, and the rest of us are pretty lucky to have you here. We greatly appreciate you willing to come on. And my question, because I know you said you're at Station 31.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to figure out how you stay in shape because you got a county line restaurant like right down the street from the station, and I would be 400 pounds if I was anywhere close to Texas eatery.
Yeah, so for people who are not from Texas, man, county line, like, you know, Texans love their barbecue in a whole lot of ways. I know you guys in South Carolina do it a little differently than we do. We love our briskets and stuff here. Man, I battle the fat kid inside me on a regular basis. So, I do my best to fight that monster back. It's hard living in this area, right? Because you couple good barbecue with really good Mexican food, which is what we do here in this area also. And man, it's a constant battle. A good problem to have, right? I can throw a rock and hit good food anywhere I want to go.
Yeah, it is a very good problem to have. Absolutely. I have that unique knowledge. Of course, I was stationed in Texas when I was in the Air Force. But my very best friend, best man at my wedding, still my best friend to this day, 25 years later, is Ed Hanna, and he's at Station 22, and that's on the south side. I know you're up on the northwest side, but
yep,
I've followed your department for years. He's been there. Well, I think he's coming up on his 20 here in another year or two. So I'm well aware of your organization, a lot of respect for Austin and what you guys do and how you do it.
Yep. Yeah, man. I think Ed's been a little bit longer than me. I think, I think he's at 22s, but they're living at another station while they're remodeling. But yeah, Ed's a good dude.
Yep. I hear stories of the remodeling.
Yes, sir. Oh,
that's always
a great subject in our town. Yes, sir.
Right. Aside from that, so you guys have this joint pre-staged rescue task force concept that you run from your division. What is that?
Yes, sir.
What are we talking about?
Well, I guess the easiest way to talk about it is kind of talk about kind of how it was born. Coming off of Charlottesville in 2017, my assistant chief of the department now, Brandon Wade, recognized and we as an organization recognized that when these events, these violent, you know, active attack type events happen, that there's always response time or flex time, right, built into all these things. And us being a capital city, we have, you know, protests and counter protests, just like your area is a capital also, right? So we always know, right, if people want to protest something and they're in Austin, they're going to go to the state capitol, right? If they're in, as Damien says it, if they're in Paris, right, that's the Eiffel Tower is a perfect landmark. That's where they go protest there. And what our bosses figured out back in the day, and back in 2017, was that sometimes, you know, we have intelligence or just from planning, we know that protesters and counter-protesters are going to meet up and there's a potential for violence, not necessarily from the people that are there protesting, but the reality is that there's always sometimes bad actors in the crowd. And they were brainstorming and thinking about how can we get ahead of this curve. And this idea of a pre-staged rescue task force was born. So my bosses got with some counterparts at Austin Police Department, and we, back in 2017, we kind of stood up our first one, very very kind of rudimentary, just to kind of see what would happen. And from there, it's kind of just, it's grown and taken many different shapes and many different turns. And just later, I believe it was that year when South by Southwest came to town, which is actually going on in Austin right now, right about half that population swells by about 500,000 folks. And they were like, hey, let's push this concept forward and see how this works at South By. And shooting happened at South By, and we were having hands-on patients after the gunshot, after the bullets hit them within, I believe that night was less than a minute. And so for us, we figured out that, hey, there's proof in this concept that showed that this thing worked. And from there, we continued to work it for special events or events that by their nature, you know, the large scale had potential for violence, and we grew from there. When you say my division, like it was born in our special operations division, but it's, as I like to say, a project, not a program, right? It was born in our special operations division, but it's an Austin Fire Department mission, and we finally like really embraced this idea that this encompasses our whole department. We've always had good relationships with APD, our Austin Police Department, and through working with them, especially since 2017, and then, you know, the huge, huge learning curve we had during civil unrest in 2020 has really taken us to a really good place as far as, number one, of the relationships we have with our partners, but also our ability to learn and do things. Like we say that we learned 3 years worth of training in about a month and a half during May, during the, you know, the month and a half of May of 2020. So there's a lot to it, right? When I talk about it, I like to say, you know, it's an overnight success, you know, 5 years in the making now. But like, it's not that we're some great success, but we've really figured out some really good ways to solve our problems. And that largely comes from the relationships that we've built with our partners.
Well, and you guys are not new to violence. In active shooter or active aggressor, active assailant, you know, how we're going to put that adjective in there. We sure. You have 55 years ago, you have the University Texas, tower shooting.
One of the first ones, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so, of course, we don't talk about that guy or his name, but sure. I mean, it's 15 people were killed, including him.
Sure.
But, and what, most recently, four years ago this month, actually, if I'm right, I think I am, you had the serial bombings in the city. And
yes, sir.
You had two civilians killed and almost three times that injured. Or exactly three times that injured. So this is not new. But the interesting
sure.
point that I pull from what you're talking about is a lot of that stuff is reactive for all services, fire, EMS, law enforcement. It's a reactive type of event. But mm-hmm. you guys are taking the proactive type of approach to it by saying, these events occur during these typical gatherings, events, you know, large-scale things, political things, stuff like that. So let's put these units in place on the ground, ready to respond as soon as something occurs.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, my partner when he talks about this, he uses this really, you know, great analogy. I'm a visual person. I think most in the fire service are, just by nature, unless choosing this job. But he makes this analogy of like a lifeguard at the pool, right? And we're metaphorically, right, we're putting the lifeguards at the pool. So we're taking that flex time and that response time out of calls to where that instead of, you know, you getting the call at the station, you having to get slide the pole, you having to drive there, you having to stage till it's, you know, whatever level of safety your jurisdiction likes. Then the cops are trying to, you know, sort things out as they always do. God bless them. That's a tough job that they have. And then we have to figure out a way to, you know, form these rescue task force, right, that are pretty popular across the country. And then we have to move in, and right. And so if you start adding up all these times, no matter how fast you are, a lot of times, like, you're going to be 18 to 20 minutes by the time that you get, you know, a task force with that medical asset on scene. So by us doing that, it really, gosh, it did a whole lot of things. Number one, absolutely, it sped up our time that we make access to those victims. On another end, it also helps us work a lot better with our partners in a lot of different ways, right? So now we don't just think about what's going to happen with our pre-stage teams. It trickles over to everyone in operations on how they respond to these events. And then the beauty is we have about 60 folks that sign up for our task force on the fire side. So you got to think about that's 60 people out in operations across different shifts that are teaching, you know, this good trauma medicine and these good, hopefully decision-making skills that they're learning and honing downtown every weekend. And they're taking that back out to the city, right? So that's a ripple effect that pushes way out. So, man, from a pre-stage standpoint, it's awesome. But for me, I love the idea that we're truly, not to sound sappy, but like we're affecting our whole department by the work that we do down there. We've built really good relationships. We've built really good reputations. And that's how we make things happen, right? I spoke earlier about calling us a project and not a program. We don't have an operating budget. We don't have a staff. We run this, as my wife likes to say, in our off time, not our part time. But the cool thing is we've established some good structure, and then I have the support of my leadership, and I know my left and right operating limits to go and make good decisions, and that's why I try to empower the folks that are on the street right now to do their job.
Well, I think it speaks volumes to the work that takes. It seems like a very simplistic idea. We're going to put a couple of cops and we're going to put a couple of firefighters and we're going to put them in these all-terrain vehicles so that we can get through crowds and, you know, hop over curbs and get in between buildings and things like that. The traditional apparatus and ambulance are going to have a problem with, they're going to struggle with as that crowd disperses and you're trying to get in there with, as you said, that flex time. So
sure,
it seems simplistic, but it absolutely is not, because we still have agencies that don't communicate with each other now, and fire officers that don't know their counterpart in law enforcement by name, let alone train next to each other or get into circumstances where they have to trust one another readily. So that's
sure,
that's no easy feat. To accomplish that,
no,
by any means.
No, man, and you know, like just like anything, right? The devil's always in the details as far as all these things go, and it seems like the way I kind of think about it in my brain, because my goal is from an old head in the Austin Fire Department, I try to take, you know, some advice or a kind of way he acts, right? Like the simplest way is usually the best path. Right, for everybody. It's usually the safest and the fastest. But what I've learned is creating that simplicity takes a lot of complexity kind of on the back end, if that makes sense. I try to think of every angle to make it as simple as we can. But the cool thing is a spawn of this is we have something in our city called an active attack work group. We founded it through the fire department. And what we do is it's kind of players from AFD, and now this last year or year before, now we have a quarterly meeting of an active attack work group, and we have representatives from Austin Fire Department, from Austin Police Department, and from Austin Travis County EMS, because there's a separate EMS system that runs within our city. So when we start making these decisions now, we have that three-legged stool I kind of talk about sometimes. It's like we have all the people there that kind of support this idea, not just from a pre-stage side, but from a department standpoint. And so because of that, right, we can work together and try to make this thing as simple as we can. Because, like, it's easy to say, like you said, right, to throw some cops and a couple firemen or firemen and EMS in the back of a Polaris and say, hey, man, go downtown and do good work. But then when you want to start thinking about, well, yeah, we can handle gunshots. We do that every weekend, right? We're a large city. Metropolitan Austin now is over 2 million with a million downtown in the core. And so, you know, we have gunshots every day. And so it's easy to say, yeah, we're going to do this. But then when you start to think about on the back end, well, if I can't handle it with a onesie or a twosie, you know, I can handle a onesie or a twosie being shot. But when it starts to escalate or exceed my resources with those RTF teams and I need to call resources in, what does that link up, right, look like? And then that's where, you know, the true lift happens so that we can start trying to integrate with our whole, with whatever responding, you know, operations company or police officer or EMS person is going to be coming. So it sounds simple, you know, in theory, but man, it can get pretty deep as far as you know, how all those things happen together. So, because we all want to do you know, the best job that we can for each other, and that I think is one of the best things about the relationships that we have, is that I can honestly say that all the other two, my two counterparts on the PD and the EMS side, we work like consciously to make sure that we're supporting each other. And I think, like, you're going to hear me say that probably like 10 times in the next, you know, 30 minutes. So yeah, there's a lot to it, man. And, but we're very agile and we try to learn and try to keep pushing, you know, this message forward, because I think it works.
So it's interesting. Talking flex time, we're talking medicine and the application, and yeah, when you're doing this and you're combining these resources, the objective is the same. We're going to stop threats. We're going to do interventions to save lives. We're going to remove casualties off the X, that kind of thing.
Yes, sir. But
the tactics to do that is very different between those agencies. And talking that flex time, that 18 minutes, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. what has been pushed, rightfully so, because you never know where you're going to be and when things are going to happen, is the tourniquet application. But what we
sure.
learned through that training is, you know, 3 minutes, in some instances less, a minute and a half, and a lot of it depends on your patient, but they get a large arterial bleed, and they're bled out and expired, or at least very, very close to that, probably
sure.
before you're even driving the rig out the door. So
absolutely.
There's an integration of training, I'm sure, because you're looking for law enforcement to their subject matter expertise of, okay, how do we move around in this environment? How do we not spoil evidence? How do I be next to you and part of you, but at the same time not be a worry to you, where you have to, you're concerned about where I am and protecting me, and at the same time staying alert for threats and things like that. On the same flip,
sure,
we're going to give them some of our knowledge, right?
Yeah. So I mean, that's actually a super great point. The relationships that we've built, like I've said this before, like I don't ever want to get shot, right? But if I had to get shot, like I'd want to get shot in Austin, because between the medicine that we're teaching our patrol officers out on the street, not just the counter assault strike team guys that ride, you know, in our pre-stage RTS, which we can talk about in a little bit, but just the regular patrol officers, the medicine that we're teaching those folks, that's where the true, to me, that's where the magic happens, right? I teach for ALERT across the country. And, of course, you know, we use the active attack integrated response, you know, principles. I mean, they're simple. We know they work. But here in the city, like, we push that. We found a way to push that to the next level. Right now, we're rolling through. We created a one-day air class, right? We've been able to condense the 16 hours down to the 8 hours of meat and potatoes with the goal of running every EMS person, 80% of the fire department, and then a large percentage of Austin Police Department through these classes, so that now everybody has, you know, especially those cops, right? So they can work that SIM, right? They can get the security done. They can form that immediate action plan and incident command, which is a huge part of it, and then kick to that medical. And Man, for the most part, it is. I'm blown away by the amount of medical and how forward thinking the law enforcement are in this in my town to pushing that medical piece towards this. We also do a medical advanced skills class, and every class that happens in town, the class is split between 10 fire spots are reserved, 10 EMS spots are reserved, and 10 APD spots are reserved, right? And so I know that a cop is never going to be asked to do a finger thoracostomy or trach somebody. But by them being, you know, learning the basics really well and then knowing the things that, that we might be doing out there, they're an asset to us now, right? And
for sure.
And that's how we've tried to play the game. Like it's absolutely incredible. The medical knowledge that the cops in my town are working towards. Right. Nobody's perfect, but man, they are. I'm constantly impressed by their you know, despite whatever, you know, sentiment my people have, or, you know, public or city or otherwise. I'm always impressed by their level of give a shit for their job, and, you know, and for and to embrace that, you know, that medical side of their duties.
Absolutely. I think you know, our professions, fire, EMS, law enforcement, that's not a job. And if it's looked at it as a job, probably not going to do all that well in it, and it's probably not going to last very long for you. Dedication,
sure,
is a huge character trait requirement in order to do.
Absolutely.
It. And being able to speak from both sides of that platform, it's amazing that the capacity, as you said, the capacity, given the opportunity and the right amount of knowledge, the capacity of us to work with each other,
yeah,
boils down to communication and understanding of what's your objectives, what are the things you need to do, or here are the things that I need to do. Okay, well, I can do that, so you can do this. Well, I can do that, so you can do that.
That's sure.
Really all it takes, and as you said, you know, it's simple, but it takes a complex mind to solve the simple. Or even to see it. So this,
sure,
conceptually, we put it on paper, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, reach out to your law enforcement, and it's, you know, just it's as simple as that to start a conversation. A handshake and a smile goes way further than anything else that you could offer. But it's not a solve; it's an introduction. The introduction's easy. After,
sure,
that, that's when things get kind of goofy.
Sure, but I think also too, man, for us, right, there was a lot of, like, I don't want anybody to get this idea that we were just kumbaya, like, from the get, right, in 2017. A lot of conversations happened, you know, it ranks well above mine to say, hey, man, this is a really good idea. Let's find some folks that you know, that know something about this. Wait, you know, like I said, Alert, you know, is Alert's in our back pocket. San Marcos is, gosh, what, 20 miles from downtown Austin. So we have a lot of instructors on both sides of the house. And the cool thing is our leadership had the foresight to go, hey, let's turn some of these folks on together, put some of these folks together that teach this stuff, and let's see if we can find a way to solve some of these problems. And just, and, you know, I don't want to say see where it goes, but, you know, to a point. We got, you know, we got an opportunity to go to try things out and to work things, and say, and, you know, and start kind of, you know, hone that sword, for lack of a better, you know, lack of a better word, until we got something that starts to looking more and more like right. And the cool thing is that, you know, 5 years later now, my bosses are still letting us kind of hone the sword. Like, one of the things I kind of worry about is, like, we're growing and we're doing great, And I've always loved, you know, the agility, you know, the smaller you are, the more agile you can be. And one of my things is, I don't mind change, right? But I do always worry that, like, man, I love how agile we are and how quickly we can adapt, with this, with this project or program that we have. And that's, you know, that's a testament to everybody kind of getting together. So.
Yeah. On the line, we can have great relationships with our line partners and the different agencies. But that's, as you said, it takes that leadership, and it takes leadership courage for the agency senior leadership to get on board and
sure.
Can I make an impact and can it be effective to have that? Yeah, it can be, but it's not going to be a global solve. And if you're trying to do something along the lines of what you guys are doing, you need a global solve, and it's not an overnight thing. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of sweat and tears and
yes, sir.
It's worth it.
A lot of
whiskey
sometimes too.
Yep, absolutely. And if you're listening to this and you guys are going down this path and you're struggling, you know, stick with it, perseverance. And there are going to be times where you're going to want to throw your hands up and say, you know, the hell with this shit. It's just not worth it. And be able to go, well, if something bad happens, we're just going to point our finger at them. Because we tried and they didn't step up to the plate. That's not gonna cut the mustard, and that's not gonna hold anything under scrutiny. Under scrutiny, once this occurs, it doesn't matter what your badge says. Most of us wear a navy blue uniform. They're not gonna care.
Mm-hmm.
If you're law enforcement, fire, EMS, they're not gonna care. What they're gonna care is that
sure.
Their loved one was impacted by this, or they were impacted by this, and there was an expectation that you were going to come in and fix that problem. And that's who we're supposed to be here for. So don't lose sight of that. And it's worth
thinking about
it.
The first thing, like a great quote from Joe Pfeiffer that I really love when he was talking about the 9/11 Commission's report, 9/11 Commission findings, right, was, it's not a lack of training; it was a lack of imagination. And so, and that kind of fits into what you're saying right there. Like, so, I would never, like, we didn't start, like, you know, right now we run pre-staged RTS every Friday and Saturday night, in addition to, you know, any planned events or pop-up events or things that might happen. Right? That didn't happen overnight. And it didn't happen because, you know, Austin's a big city. They can afford to just throw money at this and they got tons of people to do this. Man, all three of our agencies are woefully understaffed right now, right? We mandatory people constantly on the fire department side. They mandatory or have to move ambulances around on the EMS side, and God bless them, you know, the cops. They run those guys ragged and run short on shifts there too, right? So, like, this idea that, like, oh, a big city can just solve these things. No, when I talk about this, like, I battle everything that a department's much larger than me and much smaller than us battle. And all I want people to do is just understand that, like, just to your point earlier, if something happens at your wildflower festival, right? And the first thing that people are going to ask when little Johnny or little Janie, you know, God forbid, gets killed by some crazy person, the first thing they're going to ask is, what plan did you guys have to solve this, right? And, you know, like I tell my people on my crew all the time, having some plan is always better than no plan, you know, even if it's
absolutely
in most basic form. And so to me, like, it's really easy to just find, like, somebody. I mean, everybody knows somebody, whether no matter how big or small your agency is, everybody knows somebody or has a buddy or a sister or a brother or whoever, you know, that's a cop, or, you know, because, you know, we're all, you know, intermingled that way. And so everybody knows, to me, would know somebody where you could kind of get this ball rolling or this idea and go, hey, man, this festival is coming up this weekend. Here's all this data that the FBI puts out for free every year talking about how these events happen and these things go down. Oh, hey, here's these things, like, you know, that people are doing in these cities that are these plans to do this. Hey, we're already going to pay, you know, these cops to be here for security. We're already going to pay these firemen to be here for Firewatch. Why don't we get together and form a down and dirty plan and say, hey, if something happens here, we will do this, right? And by doing that,
absolutely,
like you just made a plan, right? Like you just kind of did what, like you kind of in its most basic form, you did what we're doing here. And I mean, and that can happen anywhere. And that doesn't take a budget. That doesn't take anything. It just takes somebody to go, hey, this could happen. If this does happen, then let's think about doing this, right? That's the simplest way, and you know, to make these things work somewhere.
It's resource management. That's what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You're managing your resources.
So that's like, for sure. And to speak on that, right? Like I don't have a budget. We don't have a budget. I love the stuff we do a lot. You'll hear me say I a lot, but when I say I mean the royal I, which is we, as a project and the thing, right? So I give a lot of craps about it, but with those things, what we've done really well is we've learned how to find resources or things that we already have available to us, and all we do, man, is we just pivot them to our needs, right? So that whether that's like ballistic gear, when we first started out, we didn't have ballistic gear, so APD stepped up and loaned us ballistic gear so we could purchase our own. Or if it's something like, you know, communications, right? I partner with my communications division so I can get a cache, you know, of Motorola, you know, radios that are, oddly enough, you know, a Motorola 8000 radio costs $8,000s, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you know, coincidentally. And so what we've done with that is just like, we build relationships and we find ways that it doesn't cost any money. We're already paying things we're already paying for, and we pivot it to our needs, right? So that whether that's a Polaris, whether that's like if it's inclement weather, or like for like tonight, right? I was blessed to get two brand new Polaris's dedicated just for RTS's team gear. But you know, as Murphy's Law takes place, sometimes both of them had issues today. So what do? Like you call your friends, right? EMS was able to supply one, and I was able to, you know, ring a few bells from my special operations division to shake the trees there. And if that didn't work, then, you know, APD had already, as a backup, lined up SUVs, so if we couldn't get Polaris's. And so that's kind of how – it's interesting. It's kind of all, how all three of our agencies have kind of organically started doing business so that we can, you know, continue to operate. Because if we're always asking for things, then, you know, sometimes it's really easy with budgets and manpower issues – you know, it's really easy for bosses to say no sometimes, but it seems like we've done a really good job of finding solutions. And, you know, if you have a solution, you're a battalion chief. If I show up on a fire and I say, hey, chief, I noticed that you have, you know, that this and this hasn't happened yet, I would be happy to do that for you. What are you going to say to me 9 times out of 10?
Please.
Right? Yeah, but if I
and
show
thank
up,
you.
But if I show up to yeah, but if I show up to you and go, hey, engine 31's here, what do you need? Then likely I might not get, number one, I might not get an assignment at all, or it might be an assignment that, you know, I particularly don't like. So that's kind of, you know, a way that we figured out that we find solutions, and our bosses are, you know, you're a boss. If you come with solutions, you're likely to get yes a lot more times than you're likely to get no. So that's kind of how we've kind
absolutely.
Of organically learned to operate. So.
Yep, absolutely, and that individual approach almost always meets with a high likelihood of success. But as an organizational
absolutely.
Approach or a group approach, it builds trust and it builds confidence in your entity that all you need is somebody to say yes. That's what I'm asking
mm-hmm.
for, and multiple solutions. Here's
sure.
option A and here's option B. And I've always taken the approach, I'm good with option A and I'm good with option B. I'm not going to give you an option that I'm not good with. We're going to find an A or a B. And that way, you're going to pick one of the two. I'm going to be happy when I walk away because I'm good with both options before I even throw them out there. So,
sure.
And
I mean, and that's
yeah.
a trait of also that I've learned too. Is I mean, what does a good leader say when people come to them? And they're looking for help, right? A good leader, to me, says, yes, how can I help you? That, you know, a good leader's first answer should never be, like, unless, you know, it's completely obvious that it's not a good decision, right? But if somebody's trying, like, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I've got this idea about doing this, what do you think? I mean, my answer is always going to be yes, and how can I help you do this, right? I mean, that's what my bosses do for me. I mean, that's a kind of a soapbox of mine from time to time. So,
it's mentoring and coaching. It's beyond leadership.
Sure.
It's mentoring and coaching.
It's
an important approach.
Yes, sir.
So, without crossing any lines that one might not cross,
yes, sir.
Keep your OPSEC where it ought to be. How does this kind of look when you guys put this together and push it out? Do you run through dispatch, or do you set up, you know, kind of your own unified command and managing how many resources are you trying to deal with and whatnot?
Sure. Yeah, that's easy, man. I'll kind of – how it works for us is I'll kind of lay it out, like kind of from like an origin or a start of a request for an activation is what we call it, for an RTF activation, would look like through what it looks like.
That sounds perfect. Yeah.
Till they land on the street. So,
okay.
So largely for us, it's going to start out. We have being Texas, we have in Austin, we have a fusion center here, right? An AREIC, Austin Regional Intelligence Center, which is kind of a think tank for intelligence folks. Ours is at DPS, the Department of Public Safety headquarters here. Austin Fire Department is lucky enough that we have a representative from Austin Fire Department in that building. And so
before you run off on that,
sure,
that's an excellent point. If there is such a organization or agency or entity that has that within your jurisdiction, a JTTF,
sure,
a counterterrorism unit, something like that, and you do not have a department representative on that, you need to try to fix that. There is a ridiculous amount of intel, BOLOs, things like that that come out of there that you're going to be very upset if there was a BOLO or if there was some intelligence and it didn't get to you and an event occurred and you find out about it afterwards. So just to throw that out there, make sure that if you have the access to that resource, get in there. And if you don't have access, find out how to get it. And sorry to cut you off, but
awesome, mine. I mean, yeah, sure. It makes complete, like, I mean, just kind of to, before I start down the other road, when we had the civil unrest going on, it was cool because, like, I had a representative sitting in the State Emergency Operations Center that could push, like, real-time information to us. And we have an RTF, like, command, and I'll kind of get into that in a second. But, like, imagine that, you know, that person is pushing real-time information to me. I'm sitting in a room with my two other counterparts, and we've learned to not just co-locate together, which is super important, but we've actually learned to communicate, which is, you know, kind of an odd concept, right, sometimes.
Why would you do that?
Communication. Yeah, it's crazy, right? And so, like, I can co-locate all day, but if you can't co-locate and communicate, you're just beating your head against a wall. But, I mean, that for me, that fusion center piece is, it's awesome. And it paid benefits for us, especially when we had the civil unrest in our town, because we were actually able to, like, catch the curve, right, and stay ahead of the curve on a lot of cases, anticipating things because of that information that was flowing to us. And cool thing, and the interesting thing was, is, like, sometimes I was getting that stuff, like, before my law enforcement side was. And I, you know, down to the level I was at, right? And the cool thing is I could share it with them. And then when they get it, like, they're just confirming what they'd already heard. And so, man, that's – now we have kind of some redundancy too, which is, you know, I don't know. Man, I'm with you. I think the fusion and AREIC stuff is – it's a win. So, all right, let me get back to –
yeah, roll with that. You guys get called out for civil unrest. What do you do?
Sure. Yeah, so if I get notified through a request through our intelligence center or one of my APD counterparts – how it looks is we have a POC that we've kind of designated for each of our agencies, And we all kind of come together. We have a little kind of a little group chat thing that we do. We confirm that need. And then we each kind of like, you know, kind of go our separate ways and work towards staffing that. What we have in the system that I've built, or we've built for the AFD side that we found that works really well for us is we use a Signal private messenger app to reach, you know, 60 folks, you know, in a couple of keystrokes on their cell phones, right? It's 2022 now. So I should be able to reach someone anywhere I want to, right? Especially because sometimes we have short notice, you know, we call them just-in-time events. And, like, I can staff, because of the way the system we built, I can staff an RTF in 30 minutes for whatever's going on. But back to what I was talking about. Yeah. And so that would get pretty in the weeds how that works. But how it works is we confirm our need, right? And then basically I send a message out via the Signal to the group that hits all, you know, almost 60 folks now, because you have to remember, right? We operate this RTF program on a volunteer basis, right? These are people that are working overtime from their normal shifts, and so they have to go on there and find a day that they're off or getting off or something like that. Unless it's, you know, something that pops up, and then I'll make, you know, we'll make adjustments for leave to get somebody if we absolutely have to have them. But I send a message out to folks, and they click on a little hyperlink that I have in there, and then we have some password protection stuff set up through Google Drive that we have. They go in there, and they just put their availability down. And then usually within 24 hours is the notice we like to give, so that way that, you know, people can have a life, or if they want to work overtime or whatever they want to do. We'll roster that team for whatever the need is. And the need usually will change. The need will vary based on, you know, the intelligence that comes in, if it's a special event, or like right now, like I said, we operate every Friday and Saturday night. And so an every Friday and Saturday night operation for us looks like we have an RTF group supervisor, and then we'll staff two members for an RTF team. We pick who we want to work that night. Then we create just another group. It's super easy, right? It's just like creating a message group if you're texting somebody. And then I send them the pertinent information as far as the nitty gritty, right? Show up times, combinations to our locks for, you know, for our gear and our storage stuff, who their counterparts are going to be that night, who the boss is going to be that night. And then also I tag that intel person for us on there too, so that if any intelligence pops up or anything pertinent pops up, they can hit that group, you know, up to and during the time that they're out there on the streets. And because, right, we're co-located and communicated at all three levels, now that information gets shared around so it doesn't live in a silo. And so now everybody's kind of doing, you know, getting that common operating picture. And basically they show up, man. And we have some playbooks that kind of help that we've developed that help people show up. And, you know, aside from our active attack policy, have a playbook. It's kind of like, you know, the nitty gritty, you know, the street smart kind of thing for it. And they show up, and now they hit the streets with their, you know, they brief for the evening. They hit the streets with their counterparts. We train. We do some sort of kind of on-the-job training, an hour, 30 minutes or an hour every shift, and focus on some different part of, you know, kind of whether it's trauma or whether it looks like if we have to get somebody off the X in a hurry, what does the security posture look like pulling out, and what kind of, you know, bath assessment or medical assessment we do to get the people in, you know, to kind of coordinate those things. And then the rest of the night we stay in our, you know, our area of operation and respond to calls if needed.
Yeah, you
and
just lie and wait for get punched out.
Yeah. And then the goal of our teams is you know, they're not there to go into the hot zone, right? I don't want to confuse anybody, right? I don't ask anybody to put a knife between their teeth and crawl under a hail of gunfire. What we like to do is right? Like,
right.
We want them to stay, you know, we want them to stay just out of that hot zone to where that as soon as law enforcement, those officers on the street or a quick reaction force secures that area enough, now I can bring in some folks as soon as that thing goes from hot to warm, right? And now I can start dealing with casualties and setting up casualty collection points and setting up ambulance exchange points and transportation corridors. Like, we're inserting some ICS, for lack of a better word, right? We're inserting these positions in like as fast as we possible can, so that we can do it like we talk about, like when we teach alert stuff, right? Cops are going to stop the killing. The cops are also going to stop the dying. We're going to come in there and back that stop the dying up, and then we're going to work on rapid casualty evacuation. And by us, with this model, we're just able to kind of speed that process up. And that's as complicated as I've made it, brother. Well, we've made it. Sorry.
Well, and the other beauty to this is, because I work in training now, and I'm not in operations except for when I need to cover like now. But the beauty of this is you get to be able to actually put into play something that you would reserve for an ASHR event, and you know, active shooter hostile event response type of of incident. You get to tweak it. You get to see what works, what doesn't work. You get to constantly evaluate the effectiveness of it. And then when you guys do have an event, as you said, you got 60 members across different divisions within the department, across the different battalions within the city. They're getting that experience. And then when this event occurs, if it should occur, and to be honest, it's not if, it's going to be a when, you have this force multiplication of these concepts. And
absolutely,
I think it's a great approach to dealing with a very difficult issue to be proactive with. So I think it's awesome.
Think about it also too, right? Those cops that are coming down there, the guys that work the cop side that work the pre-staged events, a lot of those guys are still on patrol, right? And then those firefighters and medics, those are people that are out there in operations. So how cool is it when you can show up to cardiac arrest and you recognize, an officer that you know, or you show up to like a gunshot or a stabbing, right? And you see somebody and those relationships are already built, right? And
oh,
I mean,
it's invaluable. It's crazy.
It's awesome. A cool like feed off of this was it last year or year before? We had an ex SWAT officer from a neighboring jurisdiction who shot his family.
I remember that.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we established, we set up, we ran, we ran the whole enchilada that day, right? Struck an active attack alarm. We established all the positions just like we're supposed to, blah, 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 blah. But the difference that day was this guy disappeared into an apartment complex and a manhunt kind of ensued, right? So mm-hmm. once that apartment complex had been cleared and he wasn't there, now it was, and when they say everybody shows up, everybody shows up. Every three-letter agency acronym that you can think of shows up there, right? But
yep, alphabet soup in the parking lot.
Absolutely. But how a cool tie back to our pre-stage program for this was that I was there, one of the first people there, and I was actually the RTF group supervisor for our RTFs that were operating on that call, right? And we got to do a few things, some great things as far as high as that goes, and we learned a lot that day. But one of the coolest things was having officers that I know show up to me and walking up to me and going, Russ, I have this going on. What do you need? Right? And me being able to look back at somebody by name and go, I need this. And they're like, stand by. Hold on. I can get that for you. Right? Like you can't buy that. And then
– No.
And then – no. And then and when the man – in this manhunt, right, pushed on through the night, and we realized after that scene got secured there, we realized that like there's a guy running around potentially the city of Austin with obviously the will to do it and the know-how to do it. So where is he going to show up next? You know what I mean? And so
exactly.
We actually
he's an operator. He's somebody who knows what he's doing.
So,
he can reach out and touch you, and you're going to know it till it's over.
Sure. And so, you know, we did. I got with my boss, and then I got with my APD counterpart and my EMS counterpart got with their boss, and we established a command post at a substation in North Austin, and we ran three RTS roving the city that night, pre-staged RTS and SUVs roving the city that night, so that they could respond if something happened and this guy, you know, popped up somewhere and started trying to do what he wanted, whatever he wanted to do, that we could respond there and have those pre-stage RTS set up and ready to go. Turns out, right, he was a coward, thank goodness, and he was arrested, you know, the next day with no incident. But, like, it kind of like all I had to do was look at my boss on that call, and I was like, hey, man, we don't know where this guy's going to be and what he's going to do next. We want to set up pre-stage before I could even set up, say, pre-stage operations, he's like, do what you need to do and go where you need to go. And so, like, we had a command post, an RTF, a pre-stage command post set up within, 45 minutes of being released from that call. And then we operated all night, and so we could respond to, you know, any potential violence that guy might have been able to carry out. So, man, I mean, it carries over from just, you know, these things like, you know, the South by Southwest or the Austin City Limits festivals or the protests. It has the ability.
Yeah, you can't buy that.
No. And so, I mean, like we have a package that shows up now that works together, that trains together, excuse me, that can do some good. And now I have these folks roving the city. I mean, that made me feel like if I was a citizen of Austin, man, that would make me feel pretty darn good.
Absolutely. And it doesn't even need to be the complexity of that.
No, sir.
Our two in the fire service, our two biggest issues working with law enforcement is going to be on a motor vehicle accident, and it's going to be on a fire.
Yes, sir.
And that just that where we see firefighters getting handcuffed for not opening up roadways and things like that. If you're on a first name basis with one of the law enforcement officers that's on that scene, that's not going to happen. That's not how that's going to end. And fire, you know, they're parking, they're blocking, they're, you know, well, I need this area cleared. We're going to stretch hose through here. I need this road shut down. That first name basis, it's like, can you do me a favor? Can you get a couple of units and shut this street down? They're going to jump all over that.
Yeah, man, I teach, I teach for Alert. So I get to go all over the country, and the relationships that we have here in our city, they're awesome, right? They're not perfect by any means, but I go some places where, like, you know, like these first responder agencies don't like each other, much less don't like work well together. And I love it,
sure.
But I feel so, I guess, naive sometimes, because I was like, you guys don't like the cops. They're like, no, forget the cops, or, you know, whatever expletive you want to use. I'm like, but man, y'all need each other to solve some of these like problems. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, man, that's largely an ego thing. Right. And it's, sometimes it's regional. Sometimes there's a lot of layers to that onion, but man, if you can't get along with the people that are out there that you're trying to work with, man, I would definitely, you know, hope that even on the area that you can control, like, man, start reevaluating some, like, you know, what can I do to, you know, because working with somebody from another agency is going to help you. And in building those relationships is going to help you. So I just don't understand the mindset of not doing that.
It's crazy. It's crazy not to. And it's been a theme for this radio show since its beginning, is you have to forge relationships. And I've said it on one show. I've probably said it on nine. Firefighters eat. We have a kitchen. We make food, and we make it pretty good. And we solve a lot of problems at a fire department kitchen table. There's a newsflash. Cops like to eat too. And all it takes is inviting your law enforcement agency to have a seat at your table.
Sure.
And if you feed a cop, you have a friend for life. Just like if you feed a firefighter a good meal, you have a friend for life. And it's as simple as that. There's no complexity to that. That's not complicated.
Yeah.
It's just ask, hey, we're doing burgers at, 6 o'clock. You guys want to come over, grab a burger? Do so. If you can't, I understand. But it's here. And that's all it takes. That's literally all it takes.
Like for us where I work, right? Texas, can get really cold in the winter and can get crazy hot in the summer, right? And so it's as simple as when you're on a traffic wreck and the cops, letting you clear because it's, got their cars off the road and you've helped them out before, right? Been a good partner to them. But just saying, hey, man, I got some cold, bubble waters at the station. Why don't you come by and take it easy or, something like that, right? Or like the cops that work in our area, they know that if they show up here between like 8 and 9:30 in the morning, they're probably going to get fed. And we're happy to do it because they're like, usually hear some cool stories, but also they're like, they're generally good dudes doing a hard job. So like, why not?
Absolutely. And not to digress or get too fun with this. Cops have a hard time finding a safe place to go to the bathroom. And
oh,
the fire station is a pretty safe place because it takes a lot to get some of that stuff off. Just if you open your house, you will gain a family member. It's literally that simple. And I know that there are agencies where leadership has said don't let that uniform cross this threshold. They're not welcome.
Yeah, that's
and if that. Yep. If that is your struggle, you have a huge culture problem, and I hope that you have the courage to try to do something about that because that is absolutely the wrong thing to say and the wrong way to look at it.
Absolutely.
So combat that where you can. You talked about Chief McKeon and you guys. Are pretty embedded together, not only just within this unit, but you guys, as you said, you teach for ALERT. You travel extensively and teach at various different places for conferences or for ALERT. What stuff do you got coming up that you want to tell people about? And are you working on anything else besides this program that's related, of course?
Sure. Yeah, so we just got to speak this actually, was it last week or the week before? We got to speak. The city of Austin hosted their first ever Fire as a Weapon symposium. We got to have Mike Klumpner come in town. Mike's a super, super great guy and an excellent speaker and got to hear some different topics on Fire as a Weapon events here in the city. It's going to be hopefully taking place every year now, so we're going to try to see if we can keep that momentum going. We were able to go over to Houston and speak at a coordinated attack conference that University of Houston sponsors and got to meet with some brothers and sisters over with Houston Fire Department and Houston PD, and they're super interested in some of the stuff we're doing here. And I learned some of the stuff they're doing there. Me and Damien are going to be in Wisconsin at the end of May for a conference on this subject in Oshkosh. Super excited about that. And then with ALERT, was just recently up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, developing some training and courses for Fire as a Weapon events, right? So we got to go up there and we built a beta class, and they're working on some funding support through some grants and Homeland Security type stuff. And so we were able to train with Fayetteville area SWAT and fire departments and EMS and trying to work this idea of what do we do on fire as a weapon calls, right? And I kind of stole a little page from Klumpner, and the easy way to explain it, if people don't know what it is if you show up on a scene and you see smoke or fire or there is the potential to, and a cop has his gun out, and so
yep, that's correct.
And And so the easy way for me to think about it is like, you kind of, I kind of go back to this idea of, hey man, having a plan is better than having no plan. And so we were, me and some other guys were given the, given the freedom to go up to Fayetteville and spend 3 days up there and truly like figure out what works, and, received incredible feedback from it. And, I believe, Alert's working on, an e-learning platform. I kind of think that's kind of the first step, but my idea is, you know, everybody knows what the AIR program is through Alert, right? Kind of, it's the national standard, and it works and it's simple. And, I'm hoping, right, that, you know, these fires are a weapon type events, even though, you know, records management system doesn't do a good job classifying them right now, they're happening everywhere all the time. And
absolutely.
My hope is that by doing this, just like, you know, active shooter stuff started somewhere, right? And now, you know, if you say rescue task force, people know what rescue task force mean, right? To the point of, you know, where even like NFPA, right, 3000, you were on that committee that did that, right? That's a national standard now. And that all was born out of what? Probably Columbine, right? I mean, that's the kind of the way I think about it. That was kind of the turning point for us as an industry on how to take better care of people. So my hope is that, you know, this fire weapon will grow some legs that way. And then who knows where that's going to go? And then who knows what's going to be next? So I love the place that I'm in. I love that I get to meet and get surrounded by really good people. I have a dear friend who's one of the best trauma medics that I've ever seen in my life. His name is Andrew Hewitt. And he has this saying that, you know, you don't get rich hanging out with broke people, right? And and we say that all the time because we go and, you know, the people that I get to meet now or talk to or even call friends in some capacities, like – the things that they've done, like, I always feel very humble, but then I always get to remind myself, man, I'm lucky because I'm whether they know it or not, man, I'm trying to soak up every bit of knowledge they can. So, you know, I love all the things that we do, and I'm hoping that, you know, these programs continue to grow.
I think it's impressive and it's honorable to take the approach of looking forward, because you said before, you know, you had Battalion Chief Pfeiffer from FDNY said, you know, this was a lack of imagination. And if our focus is active shooter, we're going to get caught. Our focus was C Bernie and we got caught by active shooter.
Sure.
Now our focus is active shooter. And that's why I like Alert. We have active assailant, integrated response. It's not active shooter. It's an active assailant. And there are many different ways that an assailant can do bad things to hurt people. And
absolutely.
Fire as a weapon, vehicle-borne attacks, you know, IDLH atmosphere, through an intentional release of something. All of that stuff out there, they are tactics that are being used, particularly overseas, particularly by terrorist organizations. It takes about 5 years for something like that to cross the pond and make it over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it will, and it does. So that's, again, part of that threat fusion center is telling you the kind of chatter and warning you of the kind of things that they're hearing an uptick of. And there are upticks of fire as a weapon. There are thwarted threats of large, complex fire as a weapon attacks. And thankfully they were thwarted, but we're not growing anthrax in our basements. You know, that biochemical takes a lot of knowledge and skill to weaponize by a true definition of weaponizing it. You know, like adding silica to anthrax and its basic DNA structure to make it more airborne. That takes know-how. That takes equipment that you have to acquire. The acquisition of that equipment is what puts you on the radar and gets you arrested.
Sure.
So
right.
It takes
somebody
nothing.
Or teaching somebody how to fly a passenger plane into a building, right?
Exactly. It takes nothing.
But a Molotov cocktail you know, through, you know, through in a busy business, and then another multi-crop deal through the same type of business across town, and you would send a big city into chaos just by two things happening at the same type of business, right?
Yep. It takes nothing to go to a gas station with a 5-gallon can and fill it up with gas. And most of people listening to this are firefighters. What damage could you do with a 5-gallon can of gas? A lot.
Sure.
And we'll just leave it at that. So
yeah, but also think about the damage you do psychologically to an area too, right?
Absolutely. Ridiculous. DC sniper. Perfect example of what that psychologically did to a regional area. People didn't leave their house.
Sure.
It's crazy. It's been going on for a long time. Thankfully, we are looking at it from a 50,000 foot viewpoint and not this micro, you know, local type standpoint to it. We're learning and we're saying we need to adapt. And what happened over there can happen over here, and there's a high likelihood that it will at some point. So let's get in front of it. I applaud
Absolutely,
you guys
man.
For that.
I agree.
I applaud you guys for what you're
Thanks.
Doing. So thank you. Yep. We're at that magical witching hour. We actually went over a little.
Awesome.
I try to keep it around an hour because I feel like most people don't want to hear my voice after 15 minutes, and so we try to keep it. Try to keep it short. My best to Chief McKeon when you speak to him. I know he's out of town. He couldn't be on, but you are more than welcome to come back on with him at any time you'd like. And we'll be glad to chew the fat with you some more. For everybody else listening, remember FDIC is about 5 weeks away. 6 weeks away, in between that somewhere. Hope you're going out. If you're not going out, I would, you know, look towards different ways, selling things on black market to raise the funds to get there. FDIC is absolutely the premier conference place. 56 different countries and in 35,000 attendees last year. We did a mini thing in August. It wasn't the same, but hopefully this April we're going to jump right into it. My workshop is Monday at 8 a.m. on the 24th, and I do the royal thing that you were mentioning. I will be presenting active shooter pre-planning the response, and I'm really happy with this class. It's the first time it's being taught at FDIC, and I'm really happy with it, and I hope everybody gets to take some stuff back to their organization and maybe look at things a little differently than what we have been. We're going to look vastly beyond the bullets and the blood and, okay, we stopped the killing, we stopped the dying, and we're going to extract patients. Well, there's way more to preparation than just fire going in and grabbing bodies, cops going in and killing bad guys, and EMS putting on tourniquets and throwing them in ambulances. It's way deeper than that. We're going to go over a lot of those aspects and hopefully give some tools for some folks. So, Lieutenant Howard, again, thank you so much for taking the time out to hop on here. I greatly appreciate it. I enjoyed talking with you, and I thought we had a really good chat. I'll leave you with the last word to everybody and anything you would like to push out there before we call it a night.
Sure. So, number one, thanks for having me. I love the subject. I think what we're doing here in our city is making a difference. Not to sound sappy, right? But I think we're doing good things. We're spreading this message, especially not just in our city, but also with our regional partners, right? Because that's for me, I'm very passionate about. I want this, you know, I want us to have a regional approach here, not just a city of Austin approach, because, right, like just like we talk about, when these things happen, everybody is coming, and everybody's jurisdiction touches, you know, some other one that's not theirs. So, what I would hope that people would get from this is is reach out to somebody that you know in another agency and then try to start building that relationship, right? Start making that down and dirty plan. And I think if we do that and just have this idea that we can get better at this, I think not only will take care of ourselves and our brothers and sisters and our agencies that we'll work with better, but also we'll do a better job of taking care of the people that we serve out there, right? And so I hate that I don't want it to be in, like, you know, when people die at these at events like this, I don't want those deaths to be in vain. So I think if people can just kind of take those little steps, I think that we can honor those people who have lost their lives in these tragedies and get better in the future. So I'm happy, and I know Chief McKeon is too. There is nothing protected or copyrighted or whatever about anything we've done. If anybody information that I can give them, they are welcome to reach out. You know how to get a hold. If I could go through you, you could push them to me, and I'll help them out however I can. So, with that, man, that's. I appreciate the time and happy to come and talk to you again, sir.
Well, thank you again. And if people have questions for Lieutenant Howard or Chief McKeon, hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and I'll make sure that they get it, especially for those who are listening to this after it's been live like this, because this will be archived for as long as Fire Engineering decides to keep it. So, again, thank everybody for tuning in on this St. Patrick's Day. Aaron Gobra, Ireland to the end of time. And stay safe out there, and we will talk to you on the next show. God bless.